You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour two on this Thursday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Gang's all here, ready to go. Spend some time with the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey. He might as well be the commissioner of college football. But he said, look, we're going to stay the course. We're going to plan on football coming up Labor Day weekend until we hear otherwise. That should be the approach. I get it. You're going to have alternatives, plan Bs, plan Cs, plan Ds. I think everything's on the table. And not only the SEC, but all these other schools, all of these other sports programs, all these other leagues. I just don't think we're going to have fans in the stands. I don't think that you're going to be able to do that this year, this calendar year. And as we move into the new year in 2021, you know, what kind of precautions, safeguards do we have in place where people are going to feel comfortable being around other people? And I think that's really that's the hurdle. There's a mental hurdle that you're going to have, because if you know you've taken care of yourself and your family, you don't know when you go to the store, when you are out walking, or, you know, you could be anywhere. You don't know where that person who is 6 feet away from you has been. And that's where you're going to have that going to some of these sporting events. You're just not quite sure. And I think that you're going to have a lot of people who are going to stay away. All right. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle @DP Show. Roy Williams, North Carolina head coach, will join us. We'll talk to Roy about Michael Jordan, recruiting Michael Jordan, who was then Mike Jordan, became Michael Jordan when he hit the jumper to beat Georgetown to win the national championship. So we'll talk to Roy about what he makes of the documentary so far. I think Kobe Bryant is going to be featured in the next weekend, next two episodes there. Looks like Reggie Miller is going to be in episode 8 or 9, but it feels like there's one person we focus on with every episode, whether it's Jerry Krause, it's Scottie Pippen, now Isaiah Thomas and the Bad Boys. Then I think it's going to be on the Jordan brand, Kobe Bryant, his rivalry with Reggie Miller. I'm not sure what the culmination is going to be. That's the one part of this that I'm interested in. What did the film crew get at the end of that night in Utah when Mike hits the game-winning shot? Wins the championship. What did they get after that? That's what I'm curious about. Because most of the information, most of the footage, I was around it. I'm not shocked by anything. At least not yet. I knew there was hatred with the Pistons. I knew that was not going away. It wasn't going to dissipate. I knew that there was acrimony between Michael and Jerry Krause, just what was going on behind the scenes, you know, Scotty with his contract. There were things that that with public information there. I'm waiting to have that. Wow, I did not know that. I knew Mike was tough on his teammates. I knew that he was, you know, a guy who wanted a chip. He wanted a grudge. Now you get to see it. I saw where Ken Burns, the great documentary producer, director, he said, you know, this isn't a true documentary because you're letting Michael's people control this product. Well, if I said you can have this, but Michael's going to be involved in it and have the final say, or you don't have it, I understand where ESPN would say, hey, we're going to take it. Because the director is doing his best to try to present this and have objectivity. But understand, Michael's going to get the last word if somebody says something in the documentary. Michael got to pick who he wanted to be interviewed for this. So it's not a true documentary. But if I said to Ken Burns, you could do a Babe Ruth documentary. His family has hundreds of hours of exclusive stuff with Babe Ruth. But they want to have editorial control, at least to a point. Would Ken Burns, who gave us so many great documentaries, would he say, no, I won't do that? Now, Ken Burns might say that. He might say, no, if you bring it to me, you trust me to provide you with a great documentary. And I will present both sides. I will give you an honest opinion of this. I will present the facts. That's probably what Ken Burns would do. But, you know, this is, if you're ESPN and Michael's going to be involved in something and he's going to have the final say, it's not a true documentary, but It's entertainment. That's how I viewed this. This is entertainment. This isn't the, you know, definite answer with everything. I'm not looking at this going, well, in the documentary, it's like Rod Thorne. Rod Thorne, who worked with the commissioner, David Stern. He was on, I think, Golic and Wingo yesterday. He was on ESPN. And he's second in command. And he said, Michael did not tell anybody not to have Isaiah Thomas on the Dream Team. Okay, maybe Rod Thorne is protecting the late commissioner, David Stern. I cannot imagine that Michael Jordan didn't say, I'm going to be on the Dream Team. This is who I don't want on the Dream Team. Michael wanted to be around his friends. Michael wanted to play golf. That's what Michael wanted to do. You know, the gold medal was never in question. You know, Larry Bird was on that team as sort of a ceremonial place because Larry was done playing basketball. You know, should Chris Mullin have been on there instead of Isaiah? Like, if you start to go down the roster, Isaiah is one of the great players of all time, obviously. But, you know, John Stockton's not going to make any waves. You know, Drexler and Jordan, you know, that was a good guy for Jordan to go against in practice. You know, Barkley was entertaining for him. Patrick Ewing and Bird formed a friendship there. Chuck Daly loved to play golf, so Jordan got to play golf. You know, I just start to take inventory of that team. Christian Laettner was on there because they were taking a college player. And Laettner was basically a team manager. And you know, you were saying, hey, to the old college style, we're going to have somebody on there. But if I go down the roster, it just makes sense. Michael wanted to have fun. You want me to represent our country and the NBA. And this was, if you look at how impactful that was on global basketball, I don't think that you can overestimate how impactful the Dream Team was. Because of all of these players who said they got a chance to see this. I mean, Ginobili said this. Dirk Nowitzki said this. They all wanted to watch. They'd stay up till 3 in the morning to be able to watch this. Michael, I understand if he had the power. Because Chuck Daly was Isaiah's coach. There is no way I can imagine. No way. No way, no way, no way.
That's the kicker.
No way. That's Chuck Daly is going to go, hey, I want Isaiah on the team. And so this has to be Michael coming in, Michael saying, hey, Chuck, I'm sorry. I want to have fun. I want to play golf. We're going to win by 50. And if I'm going to do this, this is the roster that I want there. I just think that makes sense. And Rod Thorne, he was there. He can have his opinion. I respect his opinion. I think he's protecting the commissioner and he's protecting Michael. I really do. But, you know, until I hear that, like, if I had that, that'd be one of those, oh, okay, all right, finally heard it, you know? Because I don't know if we're hearing anything about Michael and his gambling. I don't know if we're hearing anything about, is there a real reason why he went to play baseball in the prime of his career? I don't know if we're going to get, and maybe those are the answers that we have are the real answers. I don't know. But those questions have lingered. And I don't know how much Michael is going to let an independent director go in and ask these people about things. And I think that's the difference here. It's fun. It's great to watch. I think it was calculated on Michael's part to release this just when LeBron wins another championship. I get it. I get all of those things because I was around Jordan. You have to understand who he is. You can't sit there and go, would he be that competitive? Yes. Yes. You're seeing it in real time right in front of you. I'll go to my grave. I'll go to my grave thinking that Michael said, I don't want Isaiah. Why would he? Okay, let me backtrack here. So I'm going to listen to Rod Thorne, second in command in the NBA. All right, fine. Maybe he's telling the truth. Maybe that's what he thinks happened. Look at what Michael went through with the Pistons. For 3 years, they physically assaulted him. Every time they played, their job was to bring him back down to earth, literally. Okay, so start with that. Then the story that Isaiah Thomas said to the teammates on the Eastern Conference All-Star team, freeze out Jordan. Okay? Freeze out Jordan. This is the ultimate payback. I'm going to take away a gold medal from you, man. Because everybody knew the Dream Team was going to win. You want to embarrass me? I'm going to publicly shame you. I'm not going to have you on the dream team. We're having fun, holding press conference. We're playing golf. We're having a great time. We're legends. The picture, we got our gold medals, some of the greats of the game, and you're not there. You can't say, oh, Michael's not that competitive, that petty. Yeah, he is. Yeah, Paul.
And I think people cannot, you can't overestimate how big that team was at the time, because it used to be college players and then the pros and that first all-star team, that first dream team. We had Barkley on yesterday. Charles Barkley, a vital member. I think he was a leading scorer on that team. Yeah. He stole souvenirs from other players. Charles stole souvenirs, not the ball boy. Charles has a wall behind him yesterday of dream team memorabilia. That is the peak of his career.
I also saw this story that, Craig Elo was interviewed. Craig Elo is infamously remembered for the guy who's hanging in the air when Michael goes up to hit the game-winning shot against the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Mike goes up, Craig Elo goes up, and Craig Elo comes down. Mike continues to go up, hits the jumper to beat the Cavaliers, who are up there amongst the most talented teams to never win an NBA title. But Craig Elo was interviewed, and he said that, you know, he's looked at as the guy that was guarding Jordan when Jordan hit the game-winning jumper. Now, Craig Elo, by his own accounts, says, I didn't play great. I wasn't in great position. There's so many problems with that play. So many problems. You know, you got an old school coach in Lenny Wilkins, and, you know, are you going to guard the guy throwing the ball in, or are you going to guard Michael? Jordan's the only guy on the floor that you have to worry about. And this always, for the life of me, I never understood this with coaches. I'm going to put three guys on. Jordan will not touch the ball. He's not getting the ball. Absolutely, positively not getting the ball. You can't let him juke in and then back out, get the ball, and now all of a sudden he's got Larry Nance in front of him, and then he, you know, to Elo's credit, he made him go left. He didn't let him get to his strong hand. But Elo was not in great position there. But he said the thing that bothered him is Ron Harper was on the Cavs, and Ron Harper was the one who wanted to guard Jordan in that situation. I'd never heard that story. And Craig Elo was shocked by it as well, because I'm going to guess Craig Elo was probably in the huddle when they were handing out the defensive assignments there. But he said that, you know, Ron Harper said this on episode 3 of The Last Dance, that we're on the floor together, and I was like, I'll guard Mike so you don't expend all the energy. It was a no-brainer. Now, Elo had hit the shot that put Cleveland up. First time out, we weren't doing anything but catching our breath. I don't remember him saying, I got MJ to the five of us. He could have said it and walked out onto the court. Whatever he said, it wasn't directed at the rest of us. I know I've conversed through Twitter with former teammates Mark Price and Larry Nance. They were shocked he'd say something like that. I think he and MJ are such close friends now that it might have been, hey, let's cause some commotion here. When he was on those Bulls championship teams, his defense was what he was known for. But at that time, no, he was an offensive player. Not that he'd back away from it, but I didn't hear him say that in the huddle. This stuff still goes on because Jordan's involved in it. I can say this. I don't remember Ron Harper being on the floor. I remember Price, Nance, and Brad Daugherty and Craig Elo. But If Ron Harper, wouldn't you think if somebody says, I got him, hey, I want Mike? Like, Elo probably said, I'll take the challenge, but I don't think anybody in that situation goes, I want Mike. You know he's getting the ball, game on the line, and a trip to the NBA Finals, but Ron Harper, revisionist history, saying, yeah, I wanted to guard him. They wouldn't let me. It would have helped if they had a better defensive strategy by the team. How about I don't put somebody on the ball and I put two guys on Jordan? I don't let him get the ball at all. I want Brad Sellers to be wide open with the game on the line.
So did everybody.
That's, you know, when great players hit a game-winning shot, I want to know how they got the ball to hit the game-winning shot. I was at the Boston Garden when the Lakers and Celtics, when the Lakers beat the Celtics in the Garden to win the title. And all they have to do, they got a couple seconds left. Celtics have the ball. James Worthy is guarding Larry Bird. He loses Larry Bird. Bird's in the corner and clanks off the back of the iron. I can't imagine that the defensive strategy at the time by Riles was, hey, James, you're going to be on Bird by yourself. It's going to Bird. If it's somebody else who beats you, man, I'll live to. That's why when John Paxson hit the shot, if I'm the Phoenix Suns, I'm like, okay, Pax beat us. Steve Kerr hit a big shot. It wasn't Jordan. If Steve Kerr, I'll take that. It's when you have a great player who gets the ball and you somehow let him get the ball and then you start to play defense. My defense starts when you don't get the ball. That's the approach I would always have. And I, you know, Craig Elo is always remembered for that. He's just there hanging for a little while. He goes down. Mike continues to hang and hits, you know, the shot that changed the NBA. Yeah, Paul.
You mentioned that the play before that, right before, they did this great play where they did inbounds and got it back to Elo for this great, easy layup. He would have won that series for them. Yeah. And he was a pretty, considered a good player. Not a great NBA player, but a good player, all-around player. But he is in history for one thing, and it's a negative.
Yeah. It drives me crazy when I see the star player gets the ball. No. He doesn't. I don't want him to have the ball. I'm just going to put two guys on him, and he's not moving. I know Mike's a great athlete. I don't want a 6'11 guy guarding him like Larry Nance. But, man, if you want to put Harper on him, you want to put Elo on him together, have somebody wide open so it doesn't go to Michael. You know what the strategy was by Doug Collins in that situation? Doug Collins said, just give Michael the ball. Get the bleep out of the way and give. So that's what he said to the media. Get the bleep out of the way. That's great strategy there. You know, you have the Zen man. Can you imagine Phil Jackson saying, let's just get the bleep out of the way and give the ball to Mike. Now, he might have done that. But, you know, Phil's drawing up things and diagrams and all that. Because you're on camera. You know, the cameras are saying, oh, man, look at that coach, man. He's devising a play. You go to the Bulls huddle and you got Doug Collins going, hey, just get the bleep out of the way and let Michael score. That's a coaching genius right there. Yeah, Paul.
It always makes me think of the end of the movie Hoosiers. Norman Dale outthinking himself, Gene Hackman, trying to give the ball to their version of Paxson, Merle, to kick it out to him, while Jimmy Chitwood's like 9 for 9 in that game and just dominating.
But you know what happened?
What?
They let Jimmy have the ball.
Yep.
Right?
Single coverage, too.
Yes. Oh, I was angry at that coach.
Indianapolis Central,
yes,
or whatever?
Yes. They deserve to lose. I got a double team, Jimmy Chitwood.
You said that back then.
Yes, I did. Double. I'm in the movie theater. Double team Chitwood. He didn't listen to me.
Get 30 points.
I know. I'd have Ollie. I'd let Ollie have the ball. I want him to. Oh, gosh. Hoosiers makes me mad.
Ollie proved, though, he already has ice water in his veins.
Oh.
You can't.
And at the free throw line.
Yeah. That's a pressure moment. Sunk him.
All right, Roy Williams recruited somebody named Mike Jordan. We'll talk to him about that recruiting trip. And when did he realize all of a sudden this guy has a chance to be one of the greats of all time? We'll take a break. It's 20 after the hour. Glad you're part of the program. Dan and the Danette Stan Patrick Show. Oh, Discover is discovering that maybe you haven't discovered all the great things that Discover is able to give you. Great credit card. I used it last summer when traveling. You're checking things all the time. They're saying, look, even if you don't have a Discover credit card, you're not even a member, we're going to help you check your FICO credit scores. That's used by 90% of the top lenders, and you can do it for free even if you're not a customer. Checking your score won't hurt your credit, and you can check each month for changes if you want. The Discover Credit Scorecard, free for everyone. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. My thanks to Doug Gottlieb keeping me honest, saying that was an opening round victory by the Chicago Bulls over the Cleveland Cavaliers when Michael hit that shot over Craig Elo. I think Ron Harper's got revisionist history. I don't think that Harp said in the huddle, hey, I got Michael Jordan. You know, worst case scenario, I got to have Michael get the ball in the backcourt. I have to force him into the backcourt because there's not much time there. And, you know, that added to or maybe started the groundswell, the Jordan legacy in the NBA of now you had to worry about this team. But hitting that shot over Craig Elo, poor Craig Elo. Anybody ever says anything, they mention Craig Elo, they go, Oh, yeah, you're the guy that was guarding Jordan. Many, many guys have tried to guard Jordan. Roy Williams saw this genius before anybody else. The North Carolina head coach joining us. Oh, the beard looks good, coach. Whoa, it looks good.
I told Paulie and Todd that my wife and grandchildren think I look like Papa Smurf.
You look like you're related to Popovich.
Several people have told me that Pop's a great friend. So I would like it when anybody compares me to Pop.
All right. As a journalist, I have to look over your right shoulder. By the way, beautiful home. Is that the Christmas tree still up?
We have a tree that stays up, but it has birds and squirrels.
Okay.
And we go around with our grandchildren, make sure they can say what is what.
All right. Well, just as a journalist, I wanted to make sure that if the Christmas tree was up and the Christmas spirit year-round at the Williams compound, then I'm all for that. But thank you, Coach, for joining us here. What have you taken away from the first four episodes of the Bulls documentary?
Oh, it just, you know, I lived part of episodes one and two, and then I was such a huge fan of Michael and love him to death, and he treats me the same way now that he did when he was playing at North Carolina. He hasn't changed me at all, but it was brought back great memories. And I heard you talking about, you know, maybe force him in the backcourt. If I'd been the coach of the Cavaliers, they should have just gone to the locker room.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was over.
Yeah, but I got it. Would there have been a way? Now, looking back, let's say you were going to devise that. You're the coach of the Cavaliers. You're Lenny Wilkins. What would you have done that could have maybe prevented that shot?
Well, you know, everything's better in hindsight. But, yeah, I would put two guys on Michael and not allow and try to have two guys to prevent him from getting the basketball. But, you know, I'm a coach, and so everybody's always got an answer after it's over with. But when you're standing on the sideline and you've got to make that decision right there, everybody knew that they wanted to get the ball to Michael, and that's a smart thing to do. If you're coaching Michael Jordan and you use him as a decoy, I don't know that that's the smartest thing in the world unless you've got Scottie Pippen or somebody else that could make the shot as well. But, yeah, I would just put two guys on him, try to stop him getting the ball at all.
Put me in the huddle in 1982 before Michael hits the game-winning shot against Georgetown. Who was supposed to get that shot?
Well, it was the most amazing change of my feelings I've ever had in my life. I thought the entire year we were going to win the national championship. I thought we were the best team. I never had any doubts, and all of a sudden – with 31 seconds to go, coach called the timeout. We had the ball out of bounds on the sideline. And the look on our guys' faces as they came to the bench just shocked me. I said, oh, my God, we could actually lose this game. And that had never been a thought of mine, never. And so players sit down, and we as the coaches kneel down sitting in front of them, and Coach Smith was the most magical I've ever known anybody in my life. He said, guys, we're in great shape. This is exactly where we want to be. We're going to determine who wins this game. And I'll admit that I sort of faked a cough so I could look to the scoreboard to make sure, because Georgetown was one up. And I didn't want Coach Smith to think I was a scorer. But and then he kept going. He said, guys, we'll run lineup to get it in. I don't think they'll be pressing. I think they'll be in the zone. And if they are, I said, let's run two. And James, you'll go over for the lob. And Sam's going to set the screen, or Matt's going to set the screen. But if we don't get the lob, which I don't think we will, we'll go weak side, and if we get the shot, we'll take the shot. We'll have the board covered. Sam, you get middle position inside, and James, you'll have weak side board position, so we get the rebound. And if they happen to get the rebound, we'll foul them, and there's no way in the world they're going to make a foul shot in this situation, so we'll get another chance.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, everybody just – their whole expression, the look on everybody's face, including mine – changed dramatically. And as they're going out, I'm standing 2 feet away from Coach Smith, and he patted Michael on the backside and said, if you get the shot, knock it in, Michael. And that was it. So originally, yes, we wanted to throw a lob to James Worthy. I mean, he had dominated the game, but we did go over the weak side, and Michael had the shot. And if you look at the tape, we had great rebound position, and all of a sudden, then somebody told Freddie Brown to throw the ball to James.
Oh, I know. But that was the most
confidence talk I've ever heard in my life, and the change of everybody's expression. Excuse me, Dan.
But that skip pass that you had, right? That wasn't normal back then, right? Like it is now, but cross court against a team like Georgetown, that it surprised me a little bit, though.
No, it was part of the play. I still run the same play now. I mean, we try to throw the lob, and if we don't have it, we throw it on the backside, because if you have somebody like James Worthy going across, that's going to take the low forward position. That's going to take him, because he's worried about James. I don't have James or Michael now. we still run the same play. A little different players running it.
When did Michael become the best player on the team?
You know, James said 2 weeks in the episode. I'm not buying that, but
because Worthy I thought was better, you know, maybe
James was National Player of the Year,
yeah,
and the number one pick in the draft, and Michael deferred to them a great deal as a freshman. Now as a sophomore, Sam Perkins was still there, and there was no longer deferring at that time, but Michael got better and better and better. We grade the used to be film, now it's tape, after every game. And that was the Georgetown game was the only game of the year that Michael also won the Defensive Player of the Game award. And nobody ever remembers things like that. But then his sophomore year, it was over with then, because he was the best and continued through that his junior year. And I remember Rod Thorne calling a second day of practice after the Bulls had taken him and telling Coach Smith. And we were having a staff meeting when Rod called, and we were sitting there, and Rod said, "This is a joke. We do some one-on-one stuff, and we give him the ball between the top of the key and the center line, and regardless of who we put on, he dunks it." And so I think it didn't take those guys long to figure it out either.
He's Roy Williams, North Carolina head coach. How do you respond when people say, you know, the only person to stop Jordan was Dean Smith?
I just realize how sad it is that somebody can be that stupid. And, you know, that's sort of sitting on the fence with my remark. But number one, he did score 20 a game his sophomore year. But two, there was no clock. Everybody held the ball on us. Everybody ran the clock down. I mean, there was no clock, but everybody just had ball control. We only had two games that whole year. We scored over 80 points in a game, because every game we were chasing people, kind of thing. But Michael Jordan counters it best by saying, "Hey, Coach Dean Smith gave me all the fundamentals that allowed me to do everything later on." And I think that's Michael's greatness. It's just a great thing. In the episode the other night, he said, "I didn't particularly care for Phil Jackson coming in. Doug Collins wanted to give me the ball, and Phil wanted to take it out of my hands." Yeah. But you saw where at the timeout, Phil says, "Pax is the guy that's open," because Michael Jordan only cared about one thing, winning. That's all that made a difference to him.
You also look at two of the greatest players of all time. Larry Bird was homesick at Indiana. Michael got to North Carolina, and he was homesick. Did he almost leave?
No. Not at all. He loved it. Now, everybody misses your mama's home cooking. Every player I've ever had was a little homesick. But, no, that was – anybody that would say that is another – that's just somebody saying something. But there was no doubt that that young man – loved it there from the first day he stepped on campus, especially when the pickup game started and then the basketball practice started. He was an incredible person, incredible player.
But you also, you add Ewing when, you know, Michael, when Ewing shows up, does Michael then play one-on-one with him at North Carolina?
That was one of my great stories, because they were there the same weekend, pretty good two prospects on campus that were pretty good. But so I'm taking him over to the football game. And so we'd Coach Smith's meeting with him in Carmichael, where we played at that time. And so we go down on the court to walk out the back door to go to the football game. And the basketball's there. And Michael says, "We got a couple minutes." And I said, "Yeah." So he starts messing with Patrick and backing him down and then faking him shooting. And he's just laughing at Patrick. Patrick's going 25%. And I mean, maybe not even that, but they have street clothes on. And so at one point, Patrick had enough, and he got the ball, and he backed Michael down one dribble, two dribbles, and then turned and about broke the backboard, dunked it on his head. And Michael said, "You ready to go, coach?"
Let's go to the football game.
Let's go to the football game. We're done here.
There's so many good things. I go back. I told you that story. Well, I don't have to tell you the story, but I was at the Jimmy V golf tournament, and Michael would get competitive at an auction item, and he bought the motorcycle for you, and Mike didn't want the motorcycle. He wanted to win the motorcycle and then gave it to you.
We actually bought it in the auction, gave it to my wife.
Yeah.
And I said, Michael, why are you doing this? Because we were talking about a different way to go to the grocery store at the beach, and they'd bring the motorcycle in. And Juana said, you could buy that for me, and I could take that. And Michael said, do you ride? And I said, Michael, she's never ridden a bike in her life. And Wanda said, I could learn. And Michael says, I'm going to buy that for you. And wicked Wanda says, no. I mean, it petrified us. But he bought the motorcycle. I said, Michael, why are you doing this? He said, do you realize how many fried shrimp dinners she's fixed me over the years?
Oh, that's great.
And we still have the motorcycle. And we went to see about getting licensed, bought helmets. But she slipped in the parking lot at KU and broke her collarbone.
Oh, no.
And then Pat Croce, the owner of the 76ers, ran into us, says, please, that's after he had his crash that he almost was killed in. Don't do that. So we still have the motorcycle, and Wicked Wanda, who is the only one who knows how to get on this Zoom call, she's eventually going to make it into the backside of a coffee table. Because how do you get rid of a motorcycle like Michael Jordan gets, you know, that kind of thing. But he loved her fried shrimp.
That's great. The whole G League phenomenon here, Coach, is this bad for college basketball that these kids are deciding that instead of going for one and done, they're going to go into the G League?
You know, I don't think it's bad for college basketball. But the NBA is going to make their rules for what they want. They're not our partner. They're going to make the rules as what they think is best for the NBA. There'll be several players every year that will try to do that, and that's okay if they have no interest in college. The only negative thing, I think, is that they're calling kids now who have already signed and committed to go to college and trying to see if they have any interest. I don't think they should be doing that. That's my own personal opinion. But some kids really don't want to go to college, and that's okay. There's going to be a game twice a year where one team has on a Duke uniform and the other team has on a North Carolina uniform, and they're still going to play. And it's going to be that way next year and 10 years and years from now. But the NBA, they're doing the right thing in the most part because they're doing what they think is best for their game.
Do you think we're going to eventually get back to coming out of high school if you want to go pro?
I think they will. You know, and Kobe made the right decision. LeBron, Garnett, all those guys made the right decision. There's a lot of guys that made a bad decision, and I've said it all along. There's no great rule for that. There's no perfect rule for everybody. There's kids that think they're NBA players, and all of a sudden, 2 years later, they're out of the game and have no education and, you know, are not really equipped to go out in the world. But there's no perfect rule, but I think we'll eventually get back to that, yes.
Did you recruit Kobe?
Made one phone call to his father and had the conversation. And I was at Kansas at that time. And I felt like when I got off the phone call, I'm glad I had a chance to talk to his dad. But that young man is going to the NBA.
What about Garnett?
I'd never called him, but I saw him in high school and knew he was going to the NBA.
And LeBron, you didn't even place the call. No.
No.
You knew. Anybody else that you just said, nah, it's not worth it?
Oh, there's been a few, yeah. Those are the big ones. And some guys that I thought were going to go straight to the league when we had that rule didn't do it. And then guys like Zion Williamson, I think he loved his college experience. Tyler Hansbrough played for us 4 years and loved everything about it. But it's again, no perfect rule for everybody.
But you had a chance. Did you think you were getting Zion?
Boy, I worked all and we left his home. The last night, I'll have to admit that Hubert Davis, my assistant, and myself, we really thought this could really work out. It was hard for me to get in the car because when I left the porch, I was walking on air, but I didn't get to the level to get in the car.
And then all of a sudden you find out he's going to Duke?
Yeah, it was not a good night when the announcement was made, but we had somebody get in the equipment room at Duke and snip the stitches on the shoes, and that helped us. I just saw something that Luke Combs, who's a country singer, said that he had a bet, and he's from North Carolina, said he had a bet with his guitar guy and his band. He took Duke, and Luke Combs took North Carolina, and he's on the air. He said, "I appreciate everyone snip those stitches and shoot a little bit." Yeah.
We don't want to start that rumor attaching to you, Coach. You and Coach K get along. Are you competitive with him?
Yes, on the basketball court, there's no question in recruiting, but we believe in almost all the things the same. And, you know, we were served on the board of directors of NABC for a long time together. We both value the right things, and or at least they seem to be right to us, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, he doesn't play golf, so that's the other place that I compete as much as I can.
Yeah, I wonder how he'd be as a golfer.
I have no idea. I don't think I've ever seen him play.
I think he'd be too intense, though, Coach.
Well, I don't know. He's played tennis, and at one time I think he really enjoyed tennis. But Mike has done just a great job. And, you know, when Zion went there, I wished him good luck. And but, yeah, the story about the stitches did come from Luke.
Yeah, not from you.
Don't blame me for that one. Luke Combs, the country singer, who's done a great job. I love his music.
My best to your wife, and thank you again for sharing the stories that I'm sure you're probably quite tired of telling the same stories over and over, but you do it with such great enthusiasm, and keep the beard. Looks great.
Well, I love those stories because it was part of my life, and I'm glad that I said earlier that Paulie and Todd are so reverent to you during their program. They never disagree with you. So, guys, thank you very much.
Thank you, Coach. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break here. Always great to I was at that auction. That's when Darius Rucker bought Ric Flair's that full length
like a rope.
Yes, he did. And in fact, Coach is still on camera there. He's shaking his head because he remembers that was the case. That Darius said, "I love Ric Flair. I love Ric Flair. I think that full length coat, that mink coat or whatever it was, the feathers. It was like $20,000+ that Darius spent on that." And I remember that motorcycle was there, and Michael was bidding with somebody on that motorcycle. And then he bought it and said to Roy Williams, his wife, "This is for you." And I didn't know she rode motorcycles, but Michael wanted to win the auction there. We'll take a break. Doug Gottlieb will join us coming up top of the hour. We'll talk about this G League phenomenon. Is it as big, as widespread as John Calipari would have you believe? And also, a little bit later on, we will have Michael Wilbon. Pardon the interruption. We'll take a break back after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. It's National Honesty Day. Shouldn't every day be National Honesty Day? It's just once a year, National Honesty Day. Is there anything that the Danettes would like to get off of their conscience here? Sports or other, one item, National Honesty Day. Paulie, you look like you're troubled by this.
I've dabbled in this topic before, and I'm going to get absolutely crushed because I remember years ago I said I'm both a Cubs and White Sox fan, even though I prefer the Cubs.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever said this before. I grew up a hardcore Chicago Bears fan, as most people in Chicago do. That said, I've always liked the Green Bay Packers. Not rooted for, but liked the Green Bay Packers. I like their uniforms. I like Favre. I like Rodgers. I love their fan base. Mm-hmm. I love their town. I've been there a couple times. I like their tailgate. Everything about the structure of Green Bay Packers football and their stadium. I don't root for them. But Bears fans are conditioned and taught to hate the Packers. I don't have a problem with the Packers. The Bears struggles are not because of the Packers, it's because of the Bears. But I've always enjoyed the Green Bay Packer football.
All right. Fritzy?
It's not a rivalry between the two teams, but saying I've always been an Astro fan since about 1980. Before that, while I was a little leaguer in like the mid-70s, I loved the Baltimore Orioles logo with that smiling bird. And it was partially orange, like on the brim, partially brown, partially white. So before I was an Astro fan, I actually liked the Baltimore Orioles specifically because of that cute smiley bird.
No, Todd, that's lame.
That's lame?
Well, there's nothing controversial about that.
But it's National Honesty Day.
Paulie's from Chicago. He's
talking
about
more controversial.
No, you're not from Houston. You're not from Baltimore.
I used to love the Raiders before I liked them. We're not making it up.
See, that would have been better if you said, "Look, I'm really a Raiders fan."
I'd never say that.
I know.
Never gonna happen.
Yeah, but that wasn't. And you're usually, when you tell a story, you're completely honest. But that was just sort of made up. That's not, there's no controversy.
I stole something off my second grade teacher's desk. That's not sports related. She had some little skeleton and crossbones mixing thing for her coffee. And to this day, I never admitted it, but I was sitting there in the front row next to her desk and she walked away and I just took it and brought it home. And she asked the next day where that thing was. And I pretended not to know where it was.
Okay. I got something.
And the limerick thing, which I've told you guys about, that I totally plagiarized the limerick.
Yeah. What about
the stolen plates, too?
What about, you stole some, you didn't pay for some dishes.
They didn't charge me for both sets of plates, and I put them in the trunk and drove off.
Do you want to come clean on the whole Corbin thing, like what really happened at summer camp between you and Corbin?
That's really not for
your man friend.
Yeah. All I know is you're standing nipple to nipple with Corbin.
We did.
We couldn't see the lower half of you.
I can't get into that right now, but okay. We're all curious.
The great mystery of you and Corbin,
Corbin
at summer camp. McLovin, National Honesty Day, what do you have?
This is so hard for me because I'm not a fraud fan like Paulie, and I really hated the Celtics and the Cowboys. But I already did that. I stole Charles Barkley's hat and wore Barbara Streisand's bra on my head, so I'm set.
Those were great. The Barbara Streisand story is still one of my favorite things on the show that you... Your friend was apartment sitting in New York.
Yes.
Invited you over.
Yes.
And you decided to rummage through Babs's lingerie drawer.
Weird Science style. We put the bras on our head. How you got me to tell that story in the first place is a miracle. I don't know how you did it.
Seton O'Connor, National Honesty Day.
Yeah, I don't know how to top or compete with Paulie's bombshell about also liking the Packers, even though we should have seen that coming considering he grew up a Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, DePaul, Army, Navy, Air Force, Texas A&M, Texas fan, huge fan of all of the above. Sort of pan sports fuel, if you will. Mm. I would say if I was being honest, I sort of I've actually probably said this, and it should be honest. I wish that I was born in Boston instead of New Jersey. Is everything about me? As soon as I got to Boston, I was like, man, I feel like I'm home. It's exactly the right place.
Michael Wilbon thinks that one day, sometime soon, Aaron Rodgers will be wearing a Bears uniform. Wilbon will join us coming up along with Doug Gottlieb. Final hour on the way.